I think that the relationship between a husband and a wife, of course, it is compared to the relationship between Christ and the church, and that's a lifetime project, isn't it? Of developing that kind of a relationship that is meaningful and goes deeper and deeper, day by day, week after week, month after month, year after year. It's a lifetime project to develop that kind of a relationship with our God. And in our opinion, we have come to the conclusion that it's a lifetime project to develop that kind of a relationship between a man and a woman who are husband and wife. And so we're still working on it. And we may have a few things to share with you that may be helpful, that may not. We trust that they will. We've been at this thing now about almost 25 years. We celebrate our 25th wedding anniversary next September. And it has been an exciting 25 years. And so we're excited about marriage. We think it's a great institution. It's not an institution for the blind, as you sometimes hear jokingly said. It's an institution for lovers. And we believe that wholeheartedly and sincerely, and we are deeply in love with one another, have been for many, many years. But we find that love grows, and that it's a beautiful thing to behold, not only as we see it in the lives of others, but as we have seen God develop it in our own lives. And we just so much appreciate the things that down through the years the Lord has taught us together. However, having said that, I think most of us are aware of the fact that the marriage relationship and the home are in serious trouble today, just as a whole, not only here in the United States, but all over the world. Marriage is being challenged as being worthwhile. The home is fading out of the picture as far as being a place, a haven, a place where kids can be raised and loved by their parents, where they can receive wise counsel and guidance. And because of that, we have discovered that there is an intense and increasing interest in this whole subject of how can a man and a woman live together as husband and wife and really make a success out of it. Many of you are involved in the ministry, and you are in touch with couples. And you cannot afford to take it for granted that just because they come to your Bible study and sit there and smile at you and one another, that when they get back home, everything is hunky-dory. Because in 90% of the cases, it isn't. They have not really learned yet how to live with one another in harmony and in love. And so don't take anything for granted when you're working with people in this setting of a husband-wife relationship. Let's make sure that we minister to these people in this area. The divorce rate in our country is screaming toward the 50% mark, and in many of our major cities already it has reached that. In fact, in the Chicago area last year, there were more divorces than there were weddings. And this is an indictment, of course, against our country and against the attitudes that prevail. Recently in the Chicago Tribune, there was an article on housewives. And this article pointed out that 40% of all suicide attempts recorded in the United States are attempted by housewives. Now that speaks to the very issue that we're dealing with this morning, the husband-wife relationship. There's something wrong in the relationship in the home if a wife can come to the place where she's willing to toss the whole thing over and take her own life. But the wonderful thing to me and to Carol is that God invented marriage, and he intended that it have a rightful place in the home. He thought up this whole idea. It's his to start with. And so he's got some wonderful things to share with us and for us to experience in this whole thing. And to begin with, I'd like to read to you a passage from the book of Ephesians just by way of background with verse 22. You wives must learn to adapt yourselves to your husbands as you submit yourselves to the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife in the same way that Christ is the head of the church and Savior of his body. The willing subjection of the church to Christ should be reproduced in the submission of wives to their husbands. But remember, this means that the husband must give his wife the same sort of love that Christ gave to the church when he sacrificed himself for her. And men, that is the only place in Scripture where some one person, where a particular group of people, like husbands, a peer group of people, are admonished to love another person in the same way that Christ loved the church. Now, there's a general reference to that same approach in John, in the Gospel of John, but this is the only specific instance. And so it becomes quite a heavy thing for us as husbands to bear. But we can do it in the power of Christ. Christ gave himself to make her holy, having cleansed her through the baptism of his word, to make her an altogether glorious church in his eyes. She is to be free from spots, wrinkles, or any other disfigurement, a church holy and perfect. Men ought to give their wives the love they naturally have for their own bodies. The love a man gives his wife is the extending of his love for himself to enfold her. Nobody ever hates or neglects his own body. He feeds it and looks after it. And that is what Christ does for his body, the church. And we are all members of that body. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother and shall cleave to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. The marriage relationship is doubtless a great mystery. True words were never spoken. But I am speaking of something deeper still, the marriage of Christ and his church. In practice, what I've said amounts to this. Let every one of you who is a husband love his wife as he loves himself, and let the wife reverence her husband. One of the things that Carol and I have discovered is an area of the husband-wife relationship that sometimes is neglected, overlooked, or just not even thought about, is the fact that there are differences between men and women. Now, beyond the obvious. And because of these differences in responses, emotionally, in a husband and a wife facing the same situation but having a totally different response and reaction, and because a husband and a wife do not understand this in one another, frequently it causes misunderstanding, conflicts, and even anger. And if we could just get to know one another better, to know why a wife does that, because most wives do. Or to know why a husband is that way, because most husbands are that way. Rather than you sitting there condemning your dear husband because he is acting the way a man acts most of the time in that kind of a situation. Or vice versa. So we've learned that this is one of the things that is very helpful to cover right at the outset of this seminar. But to give a little, and Carol is going to come up in just a minute and go into this matter of the differences between a man and a woman, but let me give you a little bit of humor to kick it off with. I came across an article some time ago on how to tell a man from a woman, and it's some delightful observations in the nature of he's and she's. Here's how it goes. What is a man? A man is a creature of superlative intelligence, who can understand the principle of jet propulsion and the Dow Jones averages, but he can't figure out how to fold a baby's diaper, He can't understand the rules for Monopoly, and he can't grasp the basic theory of the hook and eye. A man has a remarkable retentive memory. He can recall the score of the Army-Navy game in 1948. The electoral votes for the Republicans won in the last election, and the gas mileage of his first car. But he can't remember what size socks he wears, the ages of his children, or the name of that old Richard Rogers number that his wife refers to as our song. How true, huh? And what is a woman? Well, a woman is a rattle brain who can't read a slide rule, can't follow a road map, and is vague about the make and model of the car she drives. But she can recall in vivid detail the yellow organdy dress she wore to her high school prom. And she can mentally multiply 16 people by 2.5 cheese canopies each while she's cooking beef stroganoff, ironing a blouse, helping one child compose a letter to Santa Claus, and listening to another practice scales on the piano. A man has astounding manual dexterity. He can light a match with his fingernail. He can untangle a hopelessly snarled fishing line. He can repair a light cord, fix a carburetor, operate a power saw, and park a 17-foot car in a 16-foot parking space. A woman can't do anything like that. But she can hang up a bath towel so that the monogram is right side out and precisely centered. She can unjam a stuck zipper. She can construct a pin curl and remove a sliver and balance a plate of food on her lap. A man is decisive. He can make instantaneous decisions about mergers and advertising campaigns, cutbacks in production, and million-dollar bond issues. But he has to appeal to his wife, that little muddlehead who can't decide how much to tip a bellboy, to help him decide which necktie to wear with his blue suit and what to send his mother for her birthday. Faced with a continental menu, he shrugs helplessly and asks, "Honey, do I like beef bourguignon?" A man is stoical about thunderstorms and rattlesnakes and spiders. He's fearless about guns and one-engine planes, and he'd give his eye teeth to be an astronaut. He has tremendous physical stamina and thinks it's great fun to spend all day in a cold duck blind. A woman is weak, timorous creature who lies awake hearing strange noises after reading a news bulletin that a psychopathic killer has escaped from a prison 1,500 miles away. But she doesn't quail in terror from a new baby. She'll brave the rigors of an August white sale. And she has an adventurous attitude toward the unidentifiable hors d'oeuvres. When she doesn't feel well, she does a very courageous thing. She goes to a doctor. A man has quick reflexes and keenly developed eyesight and hearing. He can keep track of the ball at a football game. He can detect an engine knock that is inaudible to the human ear, to the feminine ear. But he can't hear a baby cry for its bottle in the middle of the night. And he can't use the telephone if a child is banging two pot lids together in the next room. A man has great presence of mind in a crisis. He is a mountain of strength in a hurricane. He keeps his head when passing a truck at 60 miles an hour. He has a calm, philosophical attitude about permanents that turn out frizzy and ovens that go on the blink 2 hours before a dinner party. But he loses his head in a maternity ward, becomes a bundle of nerves during spring cleaning, and is inconsolable when his golf game goes sour. Men are practical, hard-headed realists, quite unlike women who are notoriously childlike when it comes to anything concerning money. With paper, pencil, and patent logic, a man can prove the folly of transferring a savings account from one bank to another in order to get a $3.95 set of steak knives absolutely free. But a man has implicit faith in hot market tips, and he can use the same paper and pencil to prove that buying a new car is cheaper in the long run than getting a new set of tires for the old one. A man has a sixth sense that enables him to find his way through the clover leaf, under the overpass, over the viaduct, across the bridge, and straight east to the airport without making a single wrong turn in ample time to get to the 1025 plane. A woman has a sixth sense that prompts her to keep telling him, "George, I have a funny feeling that we're headed in the wrong direction." But a woman can find the adhesive tape in the medicine cabinet. She has an uncanny prophetic sense that tells her when to arrive at the dinner party. All in all, a man is absolutely indispensable. He's brilliant, resourceful, brave, strong, steady, and a rock to lean upon. But it is his utter helplessness that is his greatest asset, because it gives his wife, that little flutter brain who can't open a jar of pickles, the certain knowledge that she is indispensable. And he couldn't get along without her, as indeed he couldn't. Come to think of it, this isn't such a bad state of affairs. So, honey, come on up and share with us some thoughts on the differences between men and women. And in addition to being my wife, she is my sweetheart, my lover, my friend, probably my, well, without question, my best friend. She is my counselor. And we are madly in love.
Thanks, honey. Charles Schulz, the creator of Peanuts, is one of my very favorite cartoonists. And he had a cartoon in the paper one day that exemplifies what we want to talk about today. Peppermint Patty is going along the street, and she's saying, "I don't know why I even think about him." Now she's laying under a tree and she says, "Chuck just doesn't seem to understand a girl's emotions. In fact, Chuck doesn't seem to understand girls at all." By this time she's starting to walk toward Charlie Brown's house. And she says, "Chuck is hard to talk to because he doesn't understand life. He doesn't understand laughing or crying. He doesn't understand love and silly talk and touching hands and things like that. He plays a lot of baseball, but I doubt if he even understands baseball." By this time, she's at his house and she's knocking on the door. And so Charlie Brown sticks his head out and she says, with a very exasperated look on her face, "I don't think you understand anything, Chuck." And then she walks away. And Charlie Brown is left standing on the doorstep with this hopeless look on his face, and he says, "I don't even understand what it is I don't understand." You ever feel like that? And we have so much to understand, don't we? We have to understand our partner's personality types. And Tim LaHaye, in his slow book, How to Be Happy Though Married, says that no, he has never seen a marriage where a husband and a wife get together who have the same personality types. And there's a reason for that. We have to understand the introvert-extrovert differences. And then we have this to understand of the basic differences between men and women. And before Jack and I started to study this subject, there were many times of frustration in our lives simply because we did not understand the different viewpoints of men and women. Now let me make a brief statement here. We are talking in generalities, but I'm not going to keep saying some of. There will be husbands and wife here who will probably be reversed in these characteristics. But we also have never seen a husband and wife get together who, if they are reversed, they're completely reversed. And God has made this for a reason. because God has made husbands and wives to complement each other, to strengthen one another, to be like this. And yet these very basic differences, sometimes when we're attracted to one another because of these differences, they're what frustrate us sometimes later on, because we clash. And we can't understand why the other one isn't responding the way we would. What's the matter with them anyway? But God wants us to complement one another. Ephesians 4:32 in the Phillips Version says this: be kind to one another. Be understanding. Be as ready to forgive each other as God, for Christ's sake, has forgiven you. Tremendous truth to that verse. We ought to all memorize it and let it be put in red across our hearts and heads. Be kind to one another. We're often unkindest to the ones we love the best. Courteous could be used here. Be understanding. A man once said that a long life is barely enough for a man and a woman to understand each other, and to be understood is to love. The man who understands one woman is qualified to understand pretty well everything. And we could say that in reverse too, couldn't we, ladies? And then be forgiving. Someone has once said that a good marriage is simply the union of two awful good forgivers. And this is true. I think my mother told me when I was knee-high to a grasshopper that if you didn't love a man enough to forgive him at least 20 times a day, just don't marry him. Well, it hasn't been that bad. But forgiveness. And of course, forgiveness is not holding a grudge. Not, we women, I suppose, are especially prone to do this, to kind of harbor things away in our hearts. As one man put it, he says, when my wife and I quarrel, she becomes historical. The other man said, don't you mean hysterical? And he said, no, I mean historical. She brings up everything I ever did. To understand each other is vitally important to our marriage, because it relates to everything else. It relates to communication, as we'll be talking about a little later. It relates to our physical lives. And it relates to our ultimate happiness and our deep unity in our marriage. Let me illustrate. Just recently I was talking to a wife who hadn't been married very long. And they had had a busy week. And she and her husband had not had a chance to really talk on a deep level, and so she was feeling rather estranged. They had a few minutes on a Sunday afternoon, and so they were laying there on the bed, and she had her head on his chest. And to her, it was a romantic moment. So there was this period of silence. And then she said, what are you thinking? And he said, oh, I was thinking about, I wonder if the boss is going to put that procedure into practice tomorrow, you know, and he goes on about this complicated procedure that the boss is about to put into practice. And she was hurt. She wanted him to be thinking about her. Gentlemen, this is always the case. So she was silent, hoping that he would ask her what she was thinking, or hoping that he would say something rather romantic. His next statement was, are you going to fix dinner? She said rather coldly, a little more hurt, but getting a little mad, maybe later. Then he said very kindly, well, I'll teach you how to fix franchises. And she blew up. Now see, he thought that she was blowing up from his very kind offer to help her fix some dinner. Totally unreasonable to him. She thought, he isn't understanding me at all. Now this, yeah, somebody's identifying. Friends, this goes on, of course, many times in our marriages. But if we don't learn understanding of one another, then at a very early time in our marriage, we can start to go this way in our thinking. Now, a man and a woman will never think on the same wavelength. God didn't mean you to think on the same wavelength. Because if you did, you'd have the same weaknesses as well as the same strengths. But our need is to bring our two wavelengths together constantly and understand each other. Now, in this case, there were three basic ingredients missing that we need constantly in our marriages. And that's humor, openness, and understanding. See, at a very basic level, if that gal who could have, when her husband said, "Oh, I'm thinking about what the boss is going to do tomorrow," if she could have kind of laughed and shaken him a little bit and say, "Hey, you big lug, I wanted you to be thinking about me," and smile, and they would have started to communicate, and he would have understood. Or if she could have understood that as a man, his thinking is often on this wavelength, and it doesn't have anything to do with the fact that he doesn't love her as much as she wants him to love her. And by the way, gentlemen, this is usually what we think. When you are not on our wavelength, it usually, to us, comes right back to the fact that you may not love us the way we want you to love us. I hate to tell you that, but it's true. Now, God made these differences for our happiness. Not to make it difficult for us, but for our happiness. Theodore Bonnet puts it this way. What is required is not that they, the husband and wife, should resemble each other, but that they should mutually complete each other, creating a harmony rather than a unison. Our ability to see three-dimensionally depends on the fact that our eyes register slightly different images on the screen before us. We need both eyes if we are to see things in the round. Everything becomes flat if we close one of them. In married life, something of the same thing happens. And I like that. Jack and I do see things from in a different point of view. But when we register together on these things, it complements each other and it becomes a strength rather than a weakness. But it's important to know and study these differences in order to understand each other. And Jack and I, our prayer is that this will just be a kickoff point for you to start to do some real study on some of the points that we'll be bringing out. Now, we find that most men are objective, and women tend to be more subjective. To a man, a fact is a fact, and he has a much more detached view. For a woman, her feelings come first, and she has a more attached view. A friend of ours recently became engaged, and when he told us, I said, "Oh, how wonderful! What's she like? When are you getting married? How did you meet her?" Jack stuck out his hand and said, "Congratulations." See, I wanted all the details. Jack hit right to the heart. That was a fact to him. Congratulations. Now, the implications of this are far-reaching, the fact that man is objective and woman is subjective. A man sees things much more realistically. He sees the bigger picture. He looks to the future. And he thinks in concept form. A woman feels more. She's more intuitive. A man is essential-minded. A woman is detail-minded. Now, let me go into this a little bit, the fact that a woman takes things personally. She's very detail-minded. And everything applies to how she feels about it personally. For instance, a man might say, "The Joneses are busy and can't come tomorrow." And a woman will think, "I wonder what we did to offend them." Now, a man has trouble sometimes thinking in detail, and so he becomes impatient about the small things. Ladies, have you ever tried to start talking to your husband, and you're telling him about this operation of this friend down the street? You know, that friend whose doctor was the same doctor as your cousin that you remember? And by this time, you look at your husband, and his eyes have crossed. Maybe it's this glaze. And suddenly you think, he's not really listening to me. And sure enough, he's not really listening to you. He's off someplace in another world. And you become hurt because you think, this is the way your mind works, he's not listening to me. He's not really interested in what I'm saying. Therefore, if he's not interested in what I'm saying, he's not interested in me. And if he's not interested in me, he doesn't love me as much as I want him to love me. Really does go back down to that. Gals, if we could just understand that our husbands have a very difficult time thinking in these little details. And it really is true, as Jack read in that humorous little deal he read, that a man does have trouble speaking on the telephone when kids are banging two pot lids together in the next room. Because they go to the heart of the matter, they think in a straight line, and they don't have this mind for detail that we do. We need it as mothers. Because we are listening to a child play the piano and another child composing a letter to Santa Claus and managing all of these details. We need it. But because of this, we get very upset with them. I think we probably get more upset with them than they do with us on this point. Because some men, most men, I suppose, can come home from a week-long conference, sit down, and you say, "Tell me all about it." And they tell you all about it in 10 minutes. Right? And you think, you know, they don't care enough to tell me. But they have told you. And we need to really understand this. I'll never forget going to see a home with a friend of mine, and a friend that's a man, and he wanted me to look at the new home that he was buying. And so we went out and looked at it together and came back. And the gal who was staying with us said, "Oh, tell me all about it." So I proceeded to tell her all about it, how the wallpaper matched the drapes, and all of these little things. And the fellow, Bob, stood there looking at me like I was describing a totally strange home. And he said, "Really, were all those things in that house?" I said, "Yeah." Well, what had he seen? He had seen a nice house. Let's buy it. And they bought it. A man might say, "It's a good-looking car, but how does it run?" A woman might say, "Isn't the dashboard cute?" A man might say, "I like that speaker's ideas." And a woman might say, "Did you notice that his shirt matched his tie?" A man would say, "It's a well-constructed house." The woman would say, "The colors in the master bedroom are hideous." Now, I'm sure you've seen this in your relationship, and maybe become irritated, but see, that's the way God made it. A woman's detail-mindedness has to do with her intuition. This is one thing that Jack has learned to use instead of resent. A woman is intuitive, and someone has said that her intuitiveness is not necessarily just a feeling that she has, but her ability to pick up 20 little details in a situation, filter it through the computer of her mind, and it comes out a feeling. And so many times after a situation, Jack will say to me, "Well, how did you feel about that situation?" And I'll tell him that I felt that there was trouble here, or I felt that it was a good relationship or something. And most of the time, I'm right. I can't tell him why I felt that way, though. I just felt that way. Now, I appreciate his objectivity because I know that he will take that and filter it through his objectivity so that I don't color things that I shouldn't color for him. You see how that fits together so beautifully? That's the way God made it. And you know, God really is fabulous in the way that he created us to mutually complete one another. Now, let me just say one more word about the fact that we take so many things personally. It's the reason that you have a hard time teasing us. If you call us chubby, there's no way that we can be objective about that. And yet, we see two men really clowning around and insulting one another, or maybe just really having a difference of opinion. They'll be right at each other with this difference of opinion. And the next minute, they'll be slapping each other on the back and just the best of friends. And I've thought of situations, I've heard Jack do this many times with people he works with. And I think, good grief, if women talk to each other that way, they wouldn't speak for 4 months. Very hard for us to take things like that in an objective way, detached way. And we do this with almost everything. Now, this is one thing, wives, that we need to work at. But for instance, if a man goes to his wife and he says, honey, you have been working hard all week. You've been cooking and cleaning. So tonight I'm going to take you out for a good dinner. See, some of you men didn't get that, even when you thought about it. A wife will pick up the good. You're going to take me out for a good dinner? What have I been cooking for you all week? And she can be hurt about a very nice statement just like that. Isn't that awful? But it's true. Now, granted that that's not your problem. I mean, you really can't be so careful that you're going to word things in that way. We need to learn to understand women and to love enough to realize that they don't mean it that way. So this is partly our problem. But in the part on communications, we'll talk a little bit more about this. Now, a man is much more logical, more thing-centered. He uses his reason. He comes to conclusions usually step by step. Because a woman is more emotional, she's more people-centered, she tends to think with her heart rather than as logically. A man might say, you didn't say you were worried. How was I to know? A woman would say, there's something bothering you. I can feel it. Now, men think in a straight line, usually. And a woman thinks all around something. Now, there's a reason for this. We get used to doing this because we're so afraid that we're going to hurt somebody. And we're so sensitive to what they might say, that in order to avoid hurting them, we'll try to go all the way around it instead of hitting it directly. Now, sorry about this, men, but you have to learn to read us on this and to decode our coded messages. For instance, I might say, I suppose I really ought to go change. And Jack will say, why don't you? And I'll say, don't you like what I've got on? And I'll say, it's okay, but you just said you were going to change. And I'll say, I was just saying that to see if it was okay not to. Jack shrugs. Now, what have I said? Well, see, I was seeking reassurance, but I was seeking it very indirectly. And I don't know why yet. I just don't come out and say things. Do you like what I've got on? But it's still very hard for me, and I've been married 25 years to a very wonderful man. So this takes work, doesn't it? To understand one another. A man identifies with his life work, his ministry, his job. A woman identifies with her home. A man thinks of his work as an extension of himself, and a woman thinks of her home as an extension of herself. This is very important. Have you ever been extremely hurt, ladies, when your husband has neglected something around the home? And maybe it's 20 down on his priority list. But you see, you have thought of that as an extension of yourself. And therefore, when he's neglected it, you have felt neglected. But the same is true with their work. Have you ever neglected something that they have wanted you to do in working with them, entertaining? You see, you thought of that as just their work. But they think of it as an extension of themselves. So it's important that you put that high on your priority list. And then a man uses speech to convey ideas and facts. A woman can use a speech many times. Or I could be saying, oh, that makes me feel ambitious. I feel like cleaning the house. I could be saying a number of things. Jax looks outside. He says, it's raining. He means the clouds have parted and little drops of rain are falling on the ground. A fact, usually. But if you don't pick this up, one time I backed the car out of the garage a little too sharply, and I took a little part of the garage with it. And I came in and I said, oh, honey, I just feel terrible. Can't imagine how I felt when I backed out the car and there was this piece of garage, and he stopped me just like that. And he says, never mind all that. What happened? Now see, this was after we started studying some of this, so I didn't cry. I realized that he wanted the facts. But see, I was trying to express a feeling that I had felt when I backed out and took that piece of garage with me. Someone has suggested that a man's main weakness is a sense of discouragement. This is his psychological pitfall. Remember this, ladies. The doer, he's the doer, the fighter, the conqueror. He needs a continuing vote of confidence to be esteemed and admired, to have his ego built up. A man can never succeed enough, will never be satisfied. A wife can either push or inspire her husband, make or break him. But if he's a success in her eyes, he never really fails. He needs her behind him at all times. Let me repeat that. He needs her behind him at all times. This person suggested that a woman's main weakness is a sense of loneliness. This is her psychological pitfall. More loving, more emotional, more dependent, she is more sensitive to human loneliness. She experiences greater need for interpersonal relationships, for heart-to-heart communication. So we need each other. And as God has said in Ephesians 4:32, this is something we need to concentrate on and to learn as we build a successful marriage. Be kind to one another. Be understanding. Be as ready to forgive others as God, for Christ's sake, has forgiven you.
She's great, isn't she? Carol referred to something that I'd like to reemphasize, and that is, I do consider Carol to be probably my chief counselor. She has this intuitive thing that most of you gals have, that is almost undescribable and that is totally illogical and yet many times has depth and perception to it that we guys just cannot come up with. And I could not even begin to number the times that after we have been in a situation together, we will sit down and go at it for a half hour, 45 minutes, or an hour, and I will quiz her quite thoroughly on her response to that situation, and we'll discuss it back and forth. And then if there is a decision or some other thing that needs to be arrived at, the thing I appreciate about Carol is that she does not feel that I have to take her counsel any more than I would anyone else's, but that her input is considered and put into the mixing pot with everything else, and that then God will lead us in that particular situation. And I have discovered, men, that frequently we fail to take advantage of this kind of thing in our wives. Now, it may not be that particular aspect of the relationship with you. It may be something else. But these gals have strengths and gifts that we do not have, that if we do not learn them and learn to take advantage of them and capitalize on them, we're missing a very vital thing that can be so meaningful to us. One day, this has been several years ago, a young couple were passing through. This is when we were living in Chicago. They were passing through town, and they stayed overnight with us. And we'd had breakfast together, and then the gals had gone off to do some shopping or something, and he and I were sitting there at the table still talking. And very cautiously, he broached a question to me. He said, Jack, he said, I've noticed that your wife and my wife are very similar in their personality. I think that was the word that he used. And he went on to describe this, that they're outgoing, vivacious, talkative, etc., etc. And he said, I noticed that you and I are somewhat alike in that we're more reserved, quiet, and in a social situation, this becomes quite a distinction. He said, how do you handle this problem? And my immediate response was, what problem? Because I had never thought of that as a problem. But he had. He was either threatened or intimidated by the fact that his wife was bubbly, outgoing, vivacious, and when they got into a social situation, she outshone him. And so he looked upon this as a problem. And so I explained to him that to me this was a tremendous asset in Carol rather than being a problem. Because I hate small talk. It is very difficult for me to be in a social situation and just sit there and yak about nothing, you know, the weather or... But Carol is very adept at it. Now, it isn't that she particularly enjoys it any more than I do, but she's good at it. And many is the time when she has covered for me in this area. We'll be in a situation and she'll realize that, well, I hate to say it, but I'm bored stiff. And she'll come in and she'll pick up the ball and we will be a team in that kind of a situation. And how much I appreciate this. It's not a threat to me. I'm not intimidated by it. I'm delighted. And guys, your wives, maybe it's not this area, but there are other areas of gifts that she has that you need to learn to capitalize on. And to learn what those assets are. And the same is true in reverse. Let's learn to work together as a team in any kind of a situation rather than being a threat to one another. or being intimidated by the other in a given situation. The scriptures tell us, as we read earlier, husbands, love your wife even as Christ also loved the church. And I'd like to talk for just a few minutes from the standpoint of what does this really mean from a very practical standpoint, putting shoe leather to our love. In a book, there is a statement that Carol and I both appreciate very much. It goes like this: love is essential to both husband and wife. To be admired is essential to both husband and wife. But to be loved is more important to a woman, and to be admired is vital to a man. I'm reminded of the situation where this husband was having a hard time on this matter of telling his wife that he loved her. She seemed to insist that he do this more often than he thought necessary, which I doubt is possible. And so he said, "Good night. Don't you know by now that I love you? I'll get a plaque and put it up over the sink. I love you," and you can read it every time you do the dishes. Well, for some reason or other, man, that isn't the way it works. See, the scriptures tell us in 1 John 3:18, "My little children, let us not love in tongue or in word or in tongue, but in deed and in truth." Actions. God's love to us is always demonstrated by action. Everywhere you find God's love expressed in the scriptures toward mankind, it is always accompanied by action. "For God so loved the world that he gave," an action word. "But God commendeth his love toward us in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died," an action word. And this is true from Genesis to Revelation. Well, now the love of a husband to a wife is to be the same kind of love that Christ has for his church, that God extends to us as human beings. It's to have action involved with it. And therefore, when I think of that little phrase, or that command, if you will, "Husbands, love your wives even as Christ also loved the church," it's got to have shoe leather to it. It's got to have action. Now, they need to hear it. And I wouldn't recommend the plaque over the sink. But there are three things that I try to do every day related to this matter of loving Carol. Now, I'm not saying that I am successful, but this is a goal that I have. Number one is to tell her that I love her every day. She needs this. There is some strange thing about a woman that she needs reassurance of our love, and to verbalize it is a very vital and important thing. And guys, I would recommend that you begin, if you have not already done so, you begin to develop the habit of saying, "I love you," at least once a day. Now, it doesn't need to be a great, gigantic, romantic setting. It can be in the kitchen, the dining room, as you're leaving the front door for work. It can be accompanied by a peck on the cheek. Or it can be just eyeball to eyeball, "Honey, I love you." But they need to hear it every day. Secondly, do something nice for her. Now, this gets a little more difficult. It's easy to verbalize something, but to do something nice for her each day. But good night, guys. Use your imagination. Let's be a little creative in this thing. Carol mentioned the house, the home, as being an extension of the wife's very life and personality. Well, there is certainly something around your home that you can dream up to do that would be a compliment to her, that would be for her. Even though you may benefit by fixing the light switch in the kitchen or changing the bulb, up in the bathroom light, that fixture that's gone out. Yet to her, that is for her, especially after she's reminded you about a half a dozen times. But to find something nice to do for her each day is another way of putting action to I love you. The third thing is to pay her a compliment. And I would recommend that if you have not begun to develop this habit, guys, that you begin to work on this, to pay her a compliment. The rewards of that are fantastic. And this becomes a habit. Charlie Shedd, in his little book called Letters to Philip, and I'm not sure whether they have it out on the book table or not. They've got Letters to Karen. They do have this one, too? They don't have the other one. Yeah. Well, they've got Letters to Karen over in the bookstore over at the other place, the Royal Inn. If you've not read this, I would heartily recommend that you get it and read it through once a year. You could not begin to practice in a lifetime all of the things, the practical implications of Charlie Shedd's book on how to treat a woman. So if you picked up one or two new things each year and just keep repeating those things, kind of like scripture memory, you know, why, man, in another 25 years, you'll be such a fantastic husband, your wife will hardly know how to live with you. He has a little chapter on this question of how to treat your wife and how to express love to her. And his motto is, if you like it, say so. Paying her a compliment, this matter of paying her a compliment. If you like it, say so. For instance, he talks about complimenting your wife on a good dinner that she has fixed. And I'd like to read this to you because he puts it in such a good way. But there are a number of things that you can say to your wife that are just spontaneous and that arise in the course of a conversation or in the course of a day. Baby, your blueberry pie is out of this world. Honey, you're not just a woman, you're a memorable experience. Something along this line, you know. But here's what Charlie said. You can think about that one for a while. Or just, honey, you're great. With a little tremble in your voice and some real feeling behind it. Amazing the response that gets. I'm being a little humorous, but I'm very serious. Do you realize, my dear boy, what a tremendous undertaking it is to serve a good meal? Planning, buying, preparing, cooking, setting the table, dishing up, and then the whole messy business in reverse when it's over. In fact, one good meal is such an accomplishment that for you to sit there, devour it, and then hurry on back to your TV game without ever saying a good word must be a mortal sin. Of course, I'm not God, and I don't know the answer to the old argument about whether there are major and minor evils. But I've had to get up a few meals from beginning to end, and if there is a difference, then neglecting to compliment the wife on a good dinner must be a very major error. There are some instances in which you'd be a fool to pass up a 100% return on your investment. This is one of them, and just 7 words will do it. That was a great meal. Thank you. But yet, guys, how often we fail to take advantage of these little opportunities to express, either by word or by action, our love to that dear gal who does so much for you and means so much to you.